it occurred to me about 3 or 4 or 5 months into the Willow Creek ministry that we were about $20,000 in debt and sinking a little every week. Mm. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, not only might the whole dream of building a church be jeopardized by the way our fundraising was going, but I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me before, but all of a sudden I realized Lynn and I might be financially devastated. I mean, we weren't making a salary from the church, so I wasn't worried about losing the salary, but it had never really dawned on me fully that we were personally culpable, at least for the lease on the offices. I looked around, and it just became very obvious to me that I had to step up to the plate and start challenging people to become financially involved, or everything in my vocation, passion, ministry, and personal life was going to be jeopardized.
I'm sure you felt it. The unending pressure to obtain the money that's needed to keep your ministry going and growing. But we're here today to help. Our goal on this tape is to give you some tools and ideas and practical insights to assist you in raising funds effectively and with integrity. Hello, I'm Lee Strobel, and I'm your host for Defining Moments, Willow Creek's audio journal for church leaders. The issue of church finances is never really too far from your mind, is it? I'm sure you've got questions about fundraising that you've always wanted to ask, but you weren't sure who to discuss them with. For instance, how engaged should the senior pastor be in raising funds for the church? What keeps people from giving, and how can you overcome those barriers? How do you integrate stewardship principles into the church's year-round preaching menu? How do you disciple someone who has the spiritual gift of giving? How should you handle it when someone wants to give money, but there are strings attached? How much should you rely on outside fundraisers? And what are some of the misconceptions that keep us from challenging the people who have the resources that can make a real difference in your church? Those are the kind of topics that I'm going to cover in my interview with Bill Hybels, the founding and senior pastor of Willow Creek Community Church. That was Bill you heard just a few moments ago, describing the defining moment when he realized that he needed to be actively concerned about the financial health of his church. That was 2 decades ago. He's learned a lot in those intervening years. And today I'm going to tap into that reservoir of experience. And I hope I'll be asking the very questions that have been on your mind. So, Bill, let me start by asking you this. Was there a point of time in the early days of Willow Creek when you sort of came face to face with the realization that if you're going to be the senior pastor of the church, you're going to have to get involved with fundraising?
Yeah, there was a time, and I remember it quite well. Lynn and I had signed personally for the office rent that of the church, $725 a month, and we were paying $300 a week for the use of the Willow Creek Theater. And, of course, we had the ministry-related expenses. And it occurred to me about 3 or 4 or 5 months into the Willow Creek ministry that we were about $20,000 in debt and sinking a little every week. And all of a sudden, I thought, nobody's going to do this. Nobody's going to wave this flag. No one's going to carry the banner. I can't, you know, Dr. B was a professor at Wheaton College. He was an elder, but he certainly wasn't going to do it. And I was 22 years old and the oldest staff member. And I looked around, and it just became very obvious to me that I had to step up to the plate and start challenging people to become financially involved, or everything in my vocation, passion, ministry, and personal life was going to be jeopardized.
And back in those early days at Willow Creek, things were kind of passive on the fundraising front. I know that initially there was no offering in the service because it was a service designed to reach spiritual seekers. I think you just had a goldfish bowl, didn't you, in the lobby?
Yeah, we overreacted. I can say this by hindsight, but when we went door to door and asked people why they stopped going to church or why they didn't attend church, very near the top of that list was, it's because they're always asking for my money. So we just said, That's one thing we won't do. We won't ask people for money, because then that won't get in the way of their making a decision about Jesus Christ. Well, what the people in fact were saying was that if the church doesn't contribute anything to my life, then I'm not highly motivated to contribute anything back to the ministry of the church. What we didn't realize is that there was enormous goodwill in our fledgling congregation. There were people whose lives were being changed, who were coming to Christ, whose families were being restored. There was enormous goodwill, but we just didn't teach or challenge or ask anybody to step up financially because of that overreaction in the early days.
Hmm. And so at some point you had to come to grips with the fact that you're going to have to carry that ball to a large degree.
In fact, I don't know in how many settings I've told this story, but we came to a point where I was so frustrated financially that I think it started to obscure my whole ability to lead and teach. And I stood in front of the small congregation at the time in the Willow Creek Theater and announced the fact that I was going to take a week or two off. And I was just talking off the top of my head, which in those days was the only way I could. But I got to the end, and I said, no, I'm going to take a couple weeks off. And then in very animated tones, I said, and if you people don't start getting involved financially in supporting this church, I don't know if I can continue to be a part of it. And really got high octane there. Well, when I walked off the platform, I was mobbed by people who said, we didn't even know there was a problem.
Hmm.
Why didn't you tell us? And, of course, I thought they ought to know. And so there was a mismatch. There was not the appropriate information flow, the alerting of what the need was. There wasn't the appropriate teaching. I really did not lead the congregation well from a financial perspective in the first 6 months or so of Willow Creek. Mm.
Well, what do you say to church leaders who kind of take the approach that fundraising ought to be delegated by them to a committee or to a board or to some other arm of the church? It's almost as if they feel like it's okay for them to delve into the spiritual side of their people's lives and the personal side to a large degree, but the financial side is off limits.
Yeah, I would say that's a bifurcation of the reality of how our spiritual lives really are viewed before God. I mean, He looks at us holistically, and very close to the heart of who we are is how we manage and allocate our resources. Jesus talked so much in His teaching ministry about the use of money, the part that it plays in someone's life, and what it says about the condition of someone's heart. And I would argue the case that the pastor of all people should be very involved in the fundraising parts of the church, because he needs to integrate it in the overall message of what a disciple is, how a disciple acts, what a Christ follower does, not just with his spiritual gifts, but with his money. And so I always refer to fundraising in a church as just a part of what it means to be an integrated follower of Christ.
You know, I had gone to some people around the country by phone who are church leaders, and I said to them, what would you want to ask Bill Hybels about this topic? And one of the questions that somebody asked, he would like to hear your response on, is, how do you diagnose why people don't give? What do you see as the barriers?
Well, it's different barriers for different people at different times of a church's development. And it requires keeping your ear to the tracks. It requires having lots of relationships in and around the church where you can just have casual conversations about these kinds of things. But I always have in the back of my mind a list of maybe a half a dozen ongoing reasons why people are reluctant to give. And I don't have these written down, so I'll just rattle off a few of these as they come to my mind. Some people don't give because they don't really think the Bible has anything to say about giving per se. In other words, they don't give because they're uninformed. They're uneducated biblically about the importance of it in their overall discipleship or followership of Christ. In those cases, I need to bring Scripture to bear on those people and to say, Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And your heart and your treasure need to be in kingdom kinds of concerns to an appropriate extent. And so, if someone is not giving because they're merely uninformed about the biblical mandates to be givers, then I bring the Scriptures to bear. There are other times where people don't give because, literally, they can't give. And in some cases, that's because they're unemployed or they have horrendous medical hardships that have cashed them out. In other cases, it's poor stewardship. And you know, Lee, that many people come to us in very difficult situations here at Willow. And part of the pain that brought them to their knees was financial mismanagement. And so they come to us and they have cars with payment books as thick as their newly purchased Bibles. And they have credit cards backed up and their house is more than they ever should have gotten into. And we need to get them on a track of understanding and we need to coach them back into financial health so that they could give if they were educated, informed, and had the desire to give. Another kind of person doesn't give because they don't see the need. They look around the church and they say, it's all in disarray. We don't know what we stand for in this church. There's no exciting focus or mission or purpose statement of the church. There are yawning people sitting around me. There are children who don't want to go to Sunday school. There are sermons that put them to sleep. And so they are demotivated. They just say, I could send that money to my uncle Albert, who is on disability, and it would be better than investing it in a lifeless, purposeless organization. And so those people, you know, really what they need is a compelling vision to excite them and to motivate them and call their resources out of storage, you know, and onto into where they can be activated for kingdom gain. And then there's another group of people who I would describe as those Christians who have just become careless. They are well-intentioned. They're well-informed. They have some stewardship principles in place in their lives, and they're fairly fired up about matters in the church. But they just didn't go that last step and take the challenge or do the hard work of integrating their giving into their family budget where it happens consistently, the full tithe or whatever percentage they're fired up to or feeling that they are capable of giving at that point. And they just are inconsistent because of carelessness. I think the kingdom of God at large would be astonished at how large a percentage that group is. And when you talk to those people, and when you challenge those people and instruct them how they can really walk away from their carelessness and become consistently generous and have it integrated into their family, there are amazing amounts of resources that can be freed up for the work of God when that category of person is addressed. So that's an example of a number of categories or types of people or challenges that I keep in the back of my mind, and I try to bring focused attention to them periodically throughout the church year.
How do you do that? What kind of attention do you bring? Obviously, there is a lot of thought given to integrating into the regular church menu teaching on financial issues, and not just at crisis times.
Yeah, actually, I don't think there is as much of that around the country and around the world as there ought to be. If you ask the average pastor to go over the last 52 sermons that he's given, and let's just look at a year, I would bet that less than three were about stewardship. Now, I'm not talking just about giving, but I'm talking about managing your money, laying up for yourselves treasures in heaven, not storing up treasures on earth, establishing a financial track where you can become free from debt. All of the things that Jesus talked about as regularly as he did go undiscussed for most of the church year. And I understand this because if you were to look at my last 52, you would probably find two or three that I would probably fit in this category as well. And I'm not saying that proudly. I'm saying that for whatever reason, we've had a substantial flow of resources here around Willow for the last few years. So I have not really been in a position where we've had to be aggressive in our teaching on that. But in the early years of the church, when we had lots of baby Christians running around who didn't have a clue about these kinds of things, I made sure that I did a full series or two every single year. And I knew that it would impact the flow of our seeker services. And I had to make all of the attendant qualifying statements to say, if you're brand new with us here this morning, don't let today's subject matter frighten you away. You're going to hear the straight truth about how God feels about money and how we handle it. And when you leave 30 minutes from now, I think you'll heave a sigh of relief that he has the feelings toward your money or his money as he does. And so I would make those qualifying remarks. But the people of the congregation were a little hesitant or resistive whenever I would announce that we were going into a three-week series or so on money or a money-related issue. But leadership has to make those tough calls and has to establish those values in the congregation, or it will impede the unfolding vision of the church. So back to the question you asked, what do you do to raise the consciousness of people in the congregation? You integrate the value of giving in the teaching menu of the church on a consistent basis, and good times and bad. And then also, of course, you keep clarifying the vision of the church so that people continually have before them exciting reasons why they should be on board with the financial part of their commitment to the church. And it's sort of a combination of teaching and vision casting that will help a church reach its financial potential.
And what about demonstrating to the church body that the church itself is stewarding its resources in a responsible way?
Hugely. We're at about the 20-year mark at Willow Creek, and if there's one thing that I am very, very proud of, there's a lot that I'm not proud of my leadership in the last 20 years, but one thing I feel real good about, God be praised, is that at our 20th anniversary, we'll be debt-free. And I feel we have modeled to our people minimal responsible indebtedness. We have modeled for our people to what it means to step out on faith and what it means to avoid foolhardiness. And we have not had a major financial event or difficulty or scandal or problem in 20 years. And I attribute most of that to a very solid group of elders and board members who just decided in the early days at Willow Creek that how we handled the money that was entrusted to us would help shape how people develop their own concept mm-hmm. of stewardship. Mm-hmm. I've always been in a position to say to people in private settings, I wouldn't have the audacity to say this publicly, but in private settings, I could say to people who had mismanaged their money, if you have to go to school on an organization as to how to handle its money, come and look at our books, because we live within our means. We don't go into irresponsible debt. If we can't afford it, we don't buy it. And we have no problem saying wait. And we've learned how to put aside a certain amount for savings or for a contingency fund in case a boiler breaks down or a roof caves in. And we've always had that the power of example in the Willow Creek organization to be able to help challenge our people to handle their money in like fashion.
Mm. Bill, I think this is really helpful to look at some of these principles that you've been articulating. The idea of integrating this teaching in the regular teaching menu of the church, vision casting as appropriate, and also being able to hold up the church as an example of an institution that is responsibly stewarding the resources that are being given to it. What else can churches do in this area?
Another that I would add is to have an open book policy. I think whenever there's suspicion in a church about where is the money really going, it is such a demotivating power in a church. People will just put their wallets away because they don't have trust. And so from the earliest days of Willow Creek, we have always had a complete open book policy. If you want to know how much we pay for the light bill, if you want to know how much a staff member makes, if you want to know how much the senior pastor makes, if you want to know what the furniture in the atrium costs, we have open books. Now, that's a risk play. You better have a clean house if you have open books. But we have always said we would rather build trust and open our books and live with that kind of visibility and accountability than ever risk a lack of trust emerging in the congregation of Willow Creek. There is so much trust at Willow Creek now that it's almost scary. If we were ever to violate that trust, I think it would set us back years. Because now we can just ask our congregation for them to consider making an extra gift like we just did some months ago. We raised $1.7 million and gave it away. But even after we raised it and told everyone where we were going to give it away, nobody even asked about it afterwards. They were just so sure that it was all going to wind up exactly where we said it was going to go that nobody even asked. So we as leaders felt so much responsibility about being trusted that much that we started giving regular reports back even when they weren't asking us, just to guard that sacred trust. And it's very important for church leaders to understand the power of the open books. Another thing I would add is I think every church that's marching into the reality of the 90s needs to have some kind of financial stewardship sub-ministry in the church. We have one here called Good Sense. But Lee, as we were saying a few moments ago, when people come into the church in financial disarray, just hearing messages about the nature of God and how to handle anger, how to build a better marriage, those are never going to get at root problems in individual lives, in changing personal financial scenarios around. And so many years ago, we built a sub-ministry called Good Sense. It has a teaching component where we have seminars, where we really inform those who are interested in these kinds of matters. And then we also have budget counselors who will sit down one-on-one or one with a family and help them redo their entire budget and show them how they can take steps over time to get out of debt and to get some money in the bank and to establish regular giving patterns. And we've even developed it to the point now where we do give counsel on estate planning and what are the kinds of future decisions, how to set aside money for kids' college, what are the smart housing decisions that can be made with a person's financial situation. And the more that churches can build sub-ministries that can mentor and tutor and walk with people from financial disarray toward financial health, that's just going to become an absolute necessity in flourishing churches around the country and around the world.
Because more and more the people coming in are those who, because of a culture, the culture we live in, are in financial disarray. They're up to their necks in debt. And as you say, they could develop a great love for the church and want to serve and want to give, and they just can't. It's inspiring to me when you come in on a Saturday in January, which is when the budget workshops are held, and see hundreds of people sitting there together, husbands and wives, a lot of them side by side, and getting real explicit, specific instructions on how to construct a budget. Maybe the first one they've ever had in their lives. And they love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is something that they want in their lives.
You know, let me add something here that's difficult to say to listeners who are church leaders, but it has to be said. And that is, those of us in leadership positions need to also lead with the power of personal example. And I can remember in the early days of Willow, when we were really trying to establish all of these principles in the lives of the congregation, with the permission of my wife, I would say to the congregation multiple times per year, if what I'm teaching you to do, if what I'm teaching you from God's Word sounds like a pipe dream to you, or if any of you feel as though I'm asking you to do something that I'm unwilling to do myself, then I would invite you to meet with me afterwards, and I will show you my personal family budget. I will show you where every check that we make, that we spend, goes. Now, that wasn't to put myself up on any pedestal. It was to identify myself as one who was trying his level best to live in a God-honoring way with my money. And again, I wouldn't have done it without Lynn's permission, and there were only a handful of people who ever took me up on it, but some actually did. We had some hardcore cynics who said, "We don't believe you give a full tithe to this church. How can you? We don't pay you enough, to live on it." And I said, "It would be a pleasure for me, to have you sit down with me." And we went right through my personal budget, and I said, "Anything that you can learn from this, I would be willing to give to you as a gift." And being that open with the congregation and living within my means and being able to look the congregation in the eye, as I still can today, and say, "You can know from me that I have far exceeded the tithe and that I'm living within the means of what it is you pay me and what I earn through books or talks or so. Don't just do as I'm saying, follow the example." And again, if you'd like to look into my personal affairs, you can. Lots of congregations are demotivated by knowledge in and around their church community that their pastors are in financial disarray themselves, that they wonder sometimes if they are contributors to the cause that they're trying to inspire everyone else to be a part of. And that power of example goes a long way.
As I've talked to pastors around the country and asked them what they would like to ask you on this topic, one that they kept coming back to is what would you say to church leaders in terms of discipling those who maybe have a spiritual gift of giving, they don't know it, people with resources in the church who are not at a place spiritually where they're contributing significantly, and yet they are people of great resources. It seems like we're willing to help people develop their spiritual gifts of evangelism and all these other areas. A lot of people want to keep hands off on the giving area. What do you do in those kind of relationships that you have with people in the church who are people of means?
Well, I've often referred to this as strategic discipling or strategic donor development. And I've argued this point in many contexts without any apology. If there were an outstanding vocalist who had gifts of creative communication who wanted to use them, it would only make good sense, good strategic sense, to help that vocalist get his or her life on track and get him or her on a spiritual growth developmental track so that as they mature, they could put their gifts into play and they could contribute musically. The same would happen, as you mentioned, with someone who's a potential Sunday school teacher or small group leader. We always want to identify those people who have the kinds of gifts that could be put into play for the common good of the body and advance the cause of Christ through the local church. Where it all gets a little uncomfortable is when we talk about having a similar concern for those who might have the gift of giving.
You're listening to Defining Moments. This is the end of Side 1. Please turn the cassette over to continue.